Welcome to the MegaCast.
Welcome to episode 79 of the MegaCast. It is the 27th of March of 2018, and I'm joined again by Wilco and Josh. Good evening, fellas.
Good evening, good evening.
I can't wait till we get to episode 200 and we get that countdown right. That countdown. We'll nail it. But
eventually we will.
I'm a little bit surprised that it's episode 79 already. Like, it just doesn't feel like it should be.
Mate, the past year and a half has dragged like a motherfucker for me, so I'm not too sure about you. It has It's been about 9 years.
Yeah.
But we've also got a special guest tonight, Nico King from Chaos Theory Games. Good evening, man.
Good evening.
Hey, man. Hey, so we'll get into a bit of an interview with you very, very shortly about exactly what Chaos Theory is up to and everything. But for the meantime, Wilco, what have you been doing for the past week, man? Because there's been a few games come out over the past seven days, hasn't there?
There's been nothing.
Wilco has done one thing.
There was one game out last week that I was very impatient for this podcast to finish so I could play, and that's all I've played ever since. Until 10 minutes before the podcast, I cracked open Far Cry 5 and I finished it. So,
very... I can't believe they've done it again. They did it again, Ubisoft. The Dories.
In all honesty, like, this leaked probably for 4 or 5 days ago that all the preview copies were starting to set. So I knew what was going to happen. But yeah, I won't spoil it, but you can finish Far Cry 5 in 10 minutes. So yeah, it's good. I'll actually probably get in to play it maybe later on after the podcast is finished, because Sea of Thieves is down for server maintenance tonight. So that's the other game I've been playing. So is Sea of Thieves.
Question for you then, Wilco. Like, Sea of Thieves is, I'm thinking, one of your mainstreams at the moment, and Far Cry 5's just come out, and I know you want to play Far Cry. So how are you going to balance the two?
I'm not going to play Far Cry 5. I've said that from the start, that Far Cry 5 is a sort of a mid-April thing that I'll get into, maybe before God of War, but maybe even after God of War. It's something I'm only going to play co-op. For the meanwhile, it'll be when the boys from USM community want to play Far Cry 5 with me, I will fire it up and give it a go. But I'm not really playing it for the story at the moment. So,
Now, do we want to get into the Sea of Thieves news, I guess? Because, I mean, you're having a lot of fun with it, aren't you? You're loving it from top to bottom.
Absolutely amazing game, yep.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a bit of a... I brought this up in the Discord earlier in the week. I saw it, and again, full disclosure, I have only played the beta. I personally have not purchased the game. I haven't played it at all. But I saw some people comparing it to No Man's Sky release on content and things like that, which I thought was really harsh.
That is
considering
bloody harsh.
The fiasco that No Man's Sky was.
But you know what that does? That gets them clicks on Twitter and that gets them views on YouTube. It really does. So it's fair if they want to do that to get their clicks and views, then that's what they do.
Yeah, fair. So you don't agree with the fact that it's lacking in content?
Not at all. Not at all. I was saying this on Twitter today, that I've played probably 30-odd hours of it, and not one time have I gone out to see, and has it felt like I've come back and that session has been the same as any other session. Just so many random different things happen. I just go around, I have encounters with other people, or I try to avoid those encounters. I find a shipwreck here and there. I jump onto islands out of my cannon, as Josh can attest to. And we were just sailing
were
along
good.
And I'm like,
you were getting good with that. Like,
do you think there's something good on... Is there something good on that island? And before he could answer, I'm shot out of the cannon flying across the sea trying to land on this island. I'm like, oh, I dropped the anchor, quick, come back. There's this crate or something here. And yeah,
it's really hard to turn a galleon quick enough for Wilco.
You should have seen, I was with Cal and Nikki on Sunday night, and we went past the fort because we needed some gunpowder. And I just said, just circle around, I'll get you on the other way back. So I've shot out, landed on the island, just off the island, swam up, grabbed the gunpowder, and as they've done the U-turn, I've swam out to them and got them on as they're going past. Didn't even have to drop the anchor. So and then we ran into the Kraken, which destroyed all hope of me getting my loot back. So I can understand those people if they've only played probably half an hour of it and they're not playing it properly. I could understand that criticism, but Yeah.
How do you not play a game properly?
You just grab the easiest voyage and you just go do that voyage and come back. The game
I will say the one complaint, and I haven't played it, but the one complaint that I have is that you can't fucking open the treasure.
Yeah, I know.
That bugs me so much, and I've said it in the Discord, and you've heard me say it, but the fact that you're a pirate and you can't fucking open the treasure that you get is dumb. Yep. It makes me mad. Like, it should be a choice, so you could go, hey, I'm going to open this, and if there's a disgustingly large rubies in here that cost more than you're going to give me for this treasure chest, fuck you, I'm keeping it. I'm a pirate.
Mm. There is a lore reason for it, but we don't really need to go into that.
Oh, that lore.
I honestly, the biggest gripes with the game at the moment is the fact that you have to get everything back to an outpost to get the rewards for them. I would like to see, you've just dug up this chest as part of the thing, take 50% of your rewards now and it's yours, or take it back to the outpost and
see. I'd like
get
to see shit like cursed items and stuff.
No, they're,
for instance,
there's cursed chests.
100%. There's cursed chests.
Yeah, but rare spawns. Like, you know, they do a timed event where a chest will spawn and it's got rare stuff in it. It's got like a rare blunderbuss that has a curse on it and stuff like that.
They've mentioned that eventually there'll be stuff that you can do down the track with that. And I think that'll have a lot to do with the legendary stuff, which once you get to that, which is looking like it's going to be probably a 100-hour grind to get to legendary status, which is good. I'm happy that they've turned around and said, we've got this content and this title in game that you really need to be a legendary player of the game to get this title. It's not going to be something you can just do in a week or a couple of hours or a day.
What do you think about the Reddit? Apparently there was a Reddit post by one of the actual developers that came on. Yeah, that came on and sort of stated that he... that for about 2 years they didn't really have any direction on the game, and he sort of did a bit of a, not a tell-all, but it was quite an interesting piece that he wrote about how they spent 2 years designing the galleons and stuff like that, but they didn't actually have any direction in terms of what they wanted the end result of the game to be and all that sort of stuff. And that's the reason why some people might be feeling like it's a game that's fun but without a lot of focus in direction.
First thing, the major thing we learnt from the EA Star Wars Battlefront 2 fiasco is you can't believe people who say the devs on Reddit or Twitter, because there was the famous EA dev that had been claiming he was an EA dev for 5 years and then
how good was that?
Death threats, and then it turned out that, oh, we don't have that guy on staff, we never have, and he's just made this up, and he vanished. Secondly, if you've got a main character of a game, one of the most intense parts of a game that needs to be made perfect, I would understand that you would spend 2 years making a ship that is the focus of the game. Like, that, to me, sort of makes sense that they would do that. And I'm surprised that it was only 2 years, to be honest.
Yeah. I can kind of understand, I guess, from one perspective of them saying that maybe they spent 2 years on the game and didn't really have a direction. I think that might be taken a little bit out of context and say, look,
exactly.
I mean, this is a game that is built specifically, the whole
to not
reason
have a direction.
For it. Yeah, it was is that. It's to be
it's
open world, jump in with your guy, with your mates and play. And then whatever happens. So I can understand that statement, hey, yeah, we worked on it without really direction, we just worked on the assets and the gameplay, because that's really all the game is at the moment. There's no storyline, really. There's none of that. It's just, it is just the assets and the gameplay, and that's it.
The Rare came out when they first announced that First Sun showed it, however many years ago it was, and said, we've made this. We don't know what it will be as yet. We've just made this. It looks cool. We enjoy it.
See,
and
I tend to think a lot of the butthurt people are actually Rare fanboys who were expecting another Banjo-Kazooie or expecting another Donkey Kong or something like that.
There's no holding your hand in this game at all, for starters. No. And what's amplified this, besides the actual internet itself, which I want to do an article on eventually very soon, that just amplifies negativity straight away, is the fact that there's been server issues in America and Europe, so people haven't been able to get in, and they take their frustration out on the game because of that. And the fact that there's so many people who got this game for free during Game Pass's 14-day free trial. Like, these people never had any intention of buying the game. They just wanted
to get in. To be fair, I still am... You know, I work in networking. I work in enterprise-level environments. I personally... I don't... Unless it's an indie dev... Nico, unless it's a smaller indie dev, unless, you know, people who don't have networking teams behind them, I don't think it's excusable for a company that is owned by Microsoft to have server issues on day one. There are so many ways that you can test and mitigate that shit that it is inexcusable in 2018. Mm-hmm. Inexcusable. We do it for our websites and our trucks and everything like that, like that we have connecting in. It's no. Even if it's bigger than it should be, even if you didn't expect the game to be that big, you should be going, how many copies are we shipping day one? We're shipping 5 million copies day one. Then we need to do modeling based on 5 million incoming connections. That has to happen, and we have to be able to support it.
Yeah.
So less than that, and you failed.
The final beta was about 250,000 to 300,000 from what we worked out. They had 1 million unique users on that first day. Particularly during that European, end of European, early American time zone. And they were 100% open and honest about what they were doing to fix it. They even shut down, you couldn't log into the game to protect the quality of the game of the people who were actually still playing it, because people logging in were causing more problems.
I understand there are problems that, you know, like issues that come about, but it just...
And we are talking about Microsoft, like DDoSing, they are using Microsoft.
Yeah, exactly. DDoSing yourself through lack of planning is not a valid excuse.
No, I don't think. They've had 3 server maintenances. That's the only time it's actually dropped out. So, and we haven't had too many issues because we're in the off-peak time. So, I'm enjoying it. I'm loving it. I'm starting to write my first impressions, because I don't think I can do a review for another couple of weeks, if not a month on it, but I do want to get my thoughts out there, because I think there's a lot of negativity because of this amplification of negativity.
Said it last week, and I'll say it again this week, I'm really stoked on the way that we're approaching reviews now. We're not rushing to get them out, instead of having to, you know, try and get a review out within a week of a game being released. We're letting them digest, we're sort of thinking about the game, finishing it, letting it sit with us for a bit, and then writing the review based on a proper impression of the game. I'm really, really enjoying that a bit more. Mm. We probably don't get as many clicks because it's not as hot a topic, but I think our reviews are going to be a lot better for it.
Yeah, I love that. I self-harm, I think, a fair bit with social media, and I decided to watch the IGN review in progress, and it's...
I'm just going to cut that part and just go, I self-harm quite a bit, I think, and just put it everywhere.
Just leave it
at that. Yeah, that's it. But they're going on about how they're pretty much not going to review it fully because it's taking too long and it's too grindy and there's not enough content, but it's going to take us too long to get there. I'm like, well, what is it? Is it too grindy, or is it there's not enough content for you to... I don't understand. And he's talking about he's played it for 30 hours. And
there can be a lack of content and too grindy. For instance, Destiny 2 had a lack of content and was way too grindy.
That was just the fact that there was no content at all once you got the end game. But no one's got the end game, so you can't grind. You can't talk about that. But yeah, I'm enjoying the grind. I heard Betty for 8-bit say it best on stream last night, that it's Pirates meets Minecraft. With a few more features, where it's just where Minecraft was this go create your own adventure in this beautiful world or this really weird world with lots of stuff to do, like lots of stuff to interact with. Sea of Thieves is like that, but more polished with pirates, and that's how I'm enjoying it. So, but yeah, we've got heaps of people playing it in the Discord. Like we're booking crews for Thursday night's voyage. There'll be at least 2 full crews at this stage. We might even get to 3. So.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'm loving it solo and with a group. So I've actually probably played more solo than with a group. I even played with Josh here on Saturday Josh and Emma. And
we finally did a fort too.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So besides the seasickness for Emma, but anyway.
Hey,
speaking of Josh.
Oh, okay. Why Josh? Well, we don't really care about Josh, do we? We want to get on to Nico.
We do.
Well, we'll do Nico then. Nico, man, what have you been up to for the part? Well, Nico, sorry, what have you been up to for the past week? Have you been playing any games? What have you been doing? Been working your ass off getting these new games released?
Well, you've convinced me to try Sea of Thieves, that's for sure.
Another one. Winning.
I remember seeing some of the really early development content, and I wasn't even aware that it had come out yet. But looking to do something this weekend, so probably spend some time playing that.
If you want to get it for free, sign up for the Xbox Game Pass for 14-day trial, and you get it for free in that for 14 days.
Hot tips. Mm-hmm. Other than that, been quite busy, but spent some time playing some more simulation style games. It's more my jam, so a bit of Kerbal Space Program, a little bit of Civ 5. That's what I enjoy.
I've got to ask that question. Have you, like, I've played Kerbal so many times in my life, and I always get to the point where I don't get off the ground ever. Have you gotten things into orbit? Have you gotten things outside of orbit? What's the furthest you've been with Kerbal? For those who don't know, Kerbal is a physics simulator where you have to build a space, like a rocket, using quite intense physics, and then get it out of the atmosphere into orbit and potentially onto other planets and asteroids and all sorts of shit, isn't there?
Yeah, that's essentially it. It's a hardcore space, aerospace simulator game. I've been out to, I've landed Kerbins on Mars and on Venus, or they've got different names in the game, but the equivalent of. But I always tend to kind of start up a new game and see how far I can get in a short burst. So
I've landed them very hard back on Earth a few times.
I never bring my astronauts back. It's always a suicide mission.
It's a one-way trip. Always a one-way trip.
Just send them out there. Just bon voyage.
Right. So what I'm learning here, right, is that do not let Matthew build anything that's meant to fly, and do not sign up for any voyages with Nico.
Fuck you, Josh. You're the first one in the rocket, you little prick. And you're not coming back either.
Probably
if I do come back, I'm going to hit hard.
And you've been playing a bit of Civ as well.
Big fan of the Civilization series. And it's kind of the game that I put on when I don't want to play anything too adventurous. I always try and play a few indie games here and there. I think that they're usually smaller, more self-contained experiences that you can get through quite quickly. One of my favorite games of all time is Rios, which is a little god-building game, another strategy game.
I remember that.
Where, you've got the gods and you move them around the planet and you build little resources and then try and make your people happy and then they start hating you. It's amazing.
Oh, good. It's like real life. Actually, we'll speak about a game later that has a city building element that I was quite surprised by, actually.
Street Fighter V.
Yes, yeah, apparently so.
Sweet, I might get back into that then.
Hey, what's your hours played in Civ 5? Because I've got a friend who has got over 4,500 hours in Civ 5, and I think he probably just leaves it on, to be fair, and just that's all it's on.
Friend in inverted commas.
Yeah, probably not 4,000. Maybe a few hundred. I need to look it up. Maybe 300 or 400. I'd say
that's still a lot. That's still a lot.
Still a decent amount of time. Yeah,
it's a decent amount of time. It's not like fucking Dota 2. God.
So you turn on Civilization 5. What's the usual
Civilization 6 play time? Is what I'm playing at the moment.
Oh, 6. Sorry. 6,
yeah.
Yeah. You turn that on. How long's the session usually for you?
Maybe 10 to 15 hours.
Holy shit.
That is
a standard Civ game, I guess.
I used to play the quick or the shortest game mode that you possibly could, but I recently found out that you get to do a lot more of the strategy and warfare if you play it on Marathon, which is the longest version. There's just a lot more time to maneuver and actually take over other enemies' empires rather than just racing for science.
I have never, ever, ever gotten to guns and nukes and all that sort of stuff. And you can get there, can't you?
So much fun when you do it.
I've always won by religion or some fucking boring thing before I get really cool things I can blow up other states with. So I don't know why. I'm playing, and then all of a sudden it just goes, you have a religious victory or something. I'm like, oh, well, I won, but I didn't get to kill anyone. That's boring.
You're playing it wrong. You're just playing
it wrong. Apparently so. You can get to the end. Like, where can you go? What's the limit you can go to in Civ 6? Can you go to space? Can you do that sort of stuff?
No, that's the end of the game. So the science victory is where you basically build a space station or leave the planet Earth. So you build a bunch of rocket parts and then shoot them up into space. And then once you complete it, you finish the game.
So we feel like Elon Musk is probably winning the Civ real life version. Is that what's happening?
Yeah.
If the victory condition was to get a Tesla into space, he's probably already won.
Tesla, can you... Fuck. Civ 7 Elon Musk edition. Just fucking... Oh, that'd be... I don't think that'd
Well, there
be
is
game.
The game that I really want to play at the moment that's just come out called Surviving Mars, and I really hope there's a Tesla on there at some stage, somewhere in the thing. So it's another city builder you might get into as well.
Yeah, I think it's on my wish list. I've seen some trailers.
Hey, anything else? Or well, because we've got an interview with you very shortly, we'll ask you about exactly what you've been up to in terms of, you know, your development work and what you're working on at the moment and everything. But in terms of playing video games, you've been playing anything else or doing anything cool over the past week you want to tell us about?
Just started playing a bit of Jackbox Party Pack 4. We've played the third one quite a bit at the office and always found it quite entertaining. The sort of
People get real politically incorrect with those games, especially when it's like the tea mashup ones. Like there are some...
Oh, those t-shirt ones. And then you can buy the t-shirts.
Yeah, there are some fucking hideous like concoctions that people come up with on those that make me sad for my family.
I think it's a mixture of people being under pressure for time to come up with something and then them not having anything and trying to be as funny as possible. And then the only way they can do that is to... be as absurd as possible.
Yeah, everyone just draws dicks.
It's like we're playing Total War Arena at the moment, and the strategy element of that, which you draw on the map, just falls into people drawing dicks on the map. Every time.
Bob's in Virgin. It just comes down to shit like that all the time. Good fun. So Jackbox Party Pack 4, are there new games in there? Is it a lot of the same sort of stuff? What's the... Because I think I've got 1, 2, and 3. I don't think I've got 4 yet.
They've got a new game where you are essentially playing Tinder as different kinds of monsters, and you're chatting with other people in the group, trying to convince them to date you and to sleep with you. And then each different kind of monster has a different special ability, a different power. And then... So everybody's got different objectives. If you do play it, I would highly recommend everybody using a random name so you don't know who anybody is. Just makes it a lot more entertaining when you're chatting to somebody and then it comes up on the screen what you said to one another and whether or not you dated. So quite funny.
Have you actually picked up through this game yet?
No, it's just my other friends and developers. So it might get a little bit awkward in the workplace if we took it seriously.
Or it might just make the workplace a lot more loving. I'm not too sure, you know, keep one way or the other. Josh, we will catch up with you, I guess. What have you been up to for the past 7 days, my man?
Like Wilco, played a lot of Sea of Thieves in that time, certainly over the weekend. That's kind of almost all I played over the weekend, that and still playing Dying Light.
I do feel kind of jealous, hey, because it seems like I'm the only person in the entirety of USM not playing Sea of Thieves.
Yeah, no, and Last Wave Agent. Last Wave Agent refuses to play because it doesn't like the art style. Go figure.
That's fair.
Yeah.
No, it's not. No, I'm calling him out. That's not fair at all.
How dare someone have an opinion that differs to yours, Wilco? How dare someone?
He has watched every single one of my streams to length on it, though, so he's enjoying watching it. He's just not...
With his eyes closed, he's just listening to your voice.
That's it.
No, so I'll play that. Like, that's just a game that whenever Aaron and I have some spare time, we jump into because, you know, it's a game that we can both play together and both enjoy. So that's what we're doing. Still playing Dying Light. Still really enjoying playing that again. Like, it's... For an old game, it is really still a fun and enjoyable game. And the story in it is still as good as I remember too. So, while I've been, you know, lying in bed, I've been playing a bit more Binding of Isaac on the Switch, because I'm nowhere near anywhere close to unlocking all the characters and stuff on that. So that's something that I'll just keep working on over the next 24 years of my life, I guess, because that's probably how long it's going to take. And then Far Cry 5 today. So I've probably played about an hour.
Oh yeah,
of it now.
But you haven't finished it yet.
No, don't look. I didn't take the easy way out. You know, I did my job properly, and I'm all the way in. So, I've pretty much got through the first tutorial kind of area where it's kind of doing the whole this is what you got to do kind of thing.
How many towers have you climbed so far?
Well, see, that's the funny thing. You actually did... I have climbed one tower, but Ubisoft seemed to have noted that everybody says that they're sick of fucking climbing towers. So as you're climbing it, they do come in and say, hey, don't worry, I'm not going to get you to climb towers all over the province or some bloody thing like that, you know? So they actually poked their fun at their own bloody...
mechanic in the game, yeah.
Mechanics, so... Look, I'm enjoying it so far. You know, as I said, I'm only an hour in, really only just starting to get into the meat of it. I just unlocked the multiplayer, you know, the multiplayer modes and stuff like that. So, I don't know, we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see, but I've always really enjoyed it.
I've actually got to play some to get the co-op side of it, do I?
Yeah, yeah, you've got to get about an hour through it.
Damn it. Okay, I'll have to do that tonight. Okay.
But I've always really enjoyed the Far Cry games, and I think my first review for USM was actually on Far Cry Primal, which...
Primal, yeah, it was.
...isn't a game at all. And
it's
way,
it's an expansion pack that they sold as a full experience.
It's not even that.
It was a money grab.
It really is just a steaming pile of dog shit. But, you know,
well, didn't you give it like a 9 out of 10? No, I'm joking.
I actually think I might have given it like... That's the USM quote on the box, isn't it?
Yeah, steaming pile of dog shit.
Well, I think that's where we want to get. Like, if we ever get quoted on a box, I think we've reached peak
Why?
Awesome.
I don't want to have to play a game where I have to learn a whole new fucking language. That's you know, and a language that's not even spoken in the world anymore. Fuck that. Jeez. Right off. That's
don't watch the anime then, mate. Especially not with fucking subtitles. You'll be
I actually
right.
know some Japanese, but that's all right.
Oh.
But yeah, no, so that's me. That's what I've been doing, anyways.
Yeah, sounds good.
That's me.
I guess we'll. Fucking hell, what have I been doing? So, I bought Ni No Kuni 2. God damn, that game is pretty. I think I went on about last week about how... Did I have the game last week?
No,
I might
you
not
didn't.
Have.
It only
no, I didn't. I was going
no,
on about
it.
You're
going to get it.
Yeah, so...
You got
Ni
that
Ni No Kuni
stupid,
2.
Huge collector's edition. Or,
yeah, the collector's edition. So, I have not splurged on a collector's edition for a video game for a very long time. This... I'm glad I did with this one. This might be the best looking collector's edition I've ever seen. It is fucking beautiful. It is so well made. It's got like a music box diorama. It's got one of the most gorgeous vinyl records that I've ever actually seen in my life. And like a pop-up sort of thing that when you open that, it's just, the whole thing is just incredibly well thought out, well designed, and fits the aesthetic of the game. For those who don't know, Ni No Kuni is a series whose art is done by the same artist behind the Studio Ghibli
yeah.
series of movies. That's like Howl's Moving Castle, Spirited Away, all that sort of stuff. And it is... God, it's a pretty game. It is very, very pretty. The first one was kind of like a Pokemon for grown-ups where it had a lot of collecting. You had to level up the monsters that you collect and battle them, and they were a big part of the fighting.
They stripped that all out, didn't they, in number two, which is weird, I thought.
Sort of not. There is still a collecting element in Ni No Kuni 2. Mm. I've got a two-year-old boy, his name's Seth. He fucking loves these things. They're called Higgledy Piggledies, and he calls them Higgle Piggle, and he thinks they're the funniest things next to Crash Bandicoot, and he loves them. He talks to them. I'm playing and battling, and he goes, "What you doing, Higgle Piggle?" And he's like talking to these things that don't actually do anything. They just run around the screen and cast magic spells. He fucking loves them. I don't know why. Which is really cute to watch.
He has got your genes in him, though, so it's...
Go fuck yourself. But he does. So Ni No Kuni 2, it's the battling is pretty cool. It's kind of like Kingdom Hearts battling, sort of. But I've just hit a part, about chapter 4, you hit a part that's quite interesting. They throw in a mechanic that is city building, very much like a SimCity or very much like a Civilization sort of game, where you start your own kingdom and you have to build things around the side. Then you research different things to get different weapons, and then you have to go to other provinces and do quests for people to try and bring people into your city, so they can, like, you might go and talk to a cook, and the cook goes, "Hey man, I really hate my job here. How about you go and kill these 4 dragons and I'll come join your fucking city for some weird reason?" And you go, "Okay, cool, that sounds fair, I don't know why." And then you can't be that good a fucking cook, "I'm about to go kill dragons, motherfucker." And then you go and kill these dragons and you go talk to the cook, and the cook's like, "Well, now I'll come cook croissants for you," or some shit, I don't know. And Yeah, and then you end up with a cook, and then you go and you speak to the cook, and you can level him up, and you can research more cooking and all that sort of stuff, and then he cooks spaghetti for you instead of croissants, and it's fucking pretty cool. So there's a city building element to it, which I really wasn't expecting, and I really wasn't expecting it to be as fun as it is either. So there's like, yeah, there's a lot of different elements to this game. There's collecting, city building, there's the battling stuff, and there's a stellar story behind the whole thing as well. Yeah, very much enjoying my time.
Technically, it is based in the same universe, but not quite in the same... Or it's the same...
It's not a direct sequel. It does reference things from the first game. I think it's a few centuries after. Oh, can we just say for a second to this? Okay. So, the whole game starts, and this isn't a spoiler because it's in the first 30 seconds of the game. The whole game starts, and you're more or less you're the president of what I'm assuming is the United States. You're the president, and you're traveling across a bridge, and you're like, I've got to get to this meeting. And then a nuclear warhead flies over your head and hits the city. And then you wake up in new place, new fantasy land.
Yeah, you're actually a whole new universe.
Yeah, a whole new universe. You wake up, you meet a kid, and the kid goes, what the fuck are you doing here? I'm the king. And you go, I'm going to stay here with you. And not once does it ever cross your mind that how the fuck did I get here, or what the fuck happened to the nuclear warhead I just watched explode over the country that I'm running, or anything like that. You just go, okay. Well, I'm here now. And they haven't revisited it again. I'm not sure what the fuck's going on.
Like, that's some hard acceptance. You know what? I accept my lot in life. This is where I am now. I was president. Yeah. Now I am shit kicker. Okay.
Yeah. It's just like when you can test the intelligence of dogs by throwing a blanket over their head, and if they try to get out, it means they understand that there's a life outside, but some breeds of dogs are so unintelligent that they just accept that all existence has ended and they won't even try to get out from underneath the blanket. It's kind of like that. Like, you're a really dumb breed of dog, and it's like, okay, well, this is where I am now. And they haven't revisited what happened to the old... I'm assuming it's going to come later on in the game, because I really hope that I find out why that country got nuked.
I'm sure you will. I hope so. You'll dig deep.
Other than that, I've been playing a shit ton of Street Fighter V and getting back into fighting games. I've more or less decided now that I'm going to become a fighting game streamer. I really enjoy streaming fighting games. The communities, the FGC, the fighting game community, is just so fucking cool. They all want to help it. They all want to body each other, but help each other at the same time. A lot of respect, but a lot of competitive nature there as well. Had some really cool people in the stream helping me learn, helping me, teaching me combos for Cammy and stuff, and I had a lot of fun with that. I think I'm pretty much just going to focus on fighting games in my streams now. I booked my tickets to Brisbane, so I will be there on the 14th of April for the Brisbane Twitch meetup. I'm very excited about that. And, like the both of you, I spent a little bit of time with Far Cry 5 just before this podcast, and might I just say, that is a fucking intense start to a video game.
Yeah.
You let it be.
No, it's just with the parallels to the powder keg that is the America at the moment. Yeah. It's tense.
I think the thing that gets me is that, you know, like when we're looking at the other Far Cry games, you know, 4 and 3 and stuff, like that's while it's in, you know, modern era, it's an unbelievable story, you know. Some random guy gets dropped on an island and then becomes, you know, mad keen, kingfish, you know, guy can kill everybody kind of thing. Whereas this is actually believable. Like, this shit could happen.
This kind of shit has happened. It already has happened, yeah. Like, this is exactly how people like, Jim Jones, the leader of the People's Temple, the cult that 900 people committed mass suicide like in the 90s or something like that, late 80s, early 90s.
Even talking Australia, like I was listening to another podcast the other day where I was learning all about the family that were down in Melbourne, I think it is, abducting kids from hospitals and stuff. You know, it's like, it's the same fucking thing, really. Like,
yeah, cults are legitimate things, and a lot of them exist and they're not evil, but the ones that are, man, they're proper like Scientology evil. And stuff. Like, you could draw probably a lot of parallels to Scientology from this as well. Don't sue us, please. but you know, like this kind of shit does happen, and the fact that it is so grounded in a climate that I could honestly see this happening means that the start of this game, everything that's said, the way that they, it's just very, it's very unnerving. I don't think I've been, from the get-go in that game, I was hooked, and I think it's, the storyline, for the first time, I think a Far Cry storyline is going to hook me more than anything. That's interesting.
I'm really interested. Obviously, I mean, you meet the main protagonist, antagonist, at the start of it, you know.
Joseph Seed, I think his name is.
Yeah. Mr. Seed, the father. But
looks like he's a cross between Conor McGregor and Donald Trump.
Okay, I can see that.
But I can't. But anyway, cool.
You meet him, and he's already as a character very. What's what I'm looking for? He's outstanding as a character. Like, it hasn't really gone too much into him and his thought processes and stuff yet.
He's commanding on screen.
Yeah,
he's just got such a presence about him. Yeah, they've managed to get that. Yeah,
and they're
managed
so good at that.
Personify that so fucking well in the game.
Yeah, I think we talked about this in Hype Train the other week when we did the episode on it. The fact that the thing Far Cry does best is it puts the antagonist at the center of the story rather than the protagonist. And the fact that they do that evil guy so well now, and I think they've just hit it out of the park.
The DC
again.
Of video games. It's all about the villains.
I made that exact same comment, to be honest, on the Hype Train. So, I'm keen to get into it eventually. It's just I've got a lot of pirating to do, to be honest.
Uninstall Napster, mate, and Kazaa, they're bad for you.
No more pirating. They're good, mate.
Australia says no. All right, Nico, let's do this, man. Chaos Theory Games. What have you guys been up to by that incredible little rainbow reef that we saw at PAX last year? What have you been up to recently?
Quite a few projects. So the majority of what we do is client services work. So that Rainbow Reef game has been on hold since PAX. We found a publisher down in Melbourne, and we're talking to them, still in negotiations. We were hoping to get sign off before Christmas, but things are still moving, so that's still
Christmas 2018, don't worry about it. It's still coming.
Yes, we've got another Christmas coming. Still working on that, which is good. But in the meantime, the main project we've been working on is a new word game. It's a collaboration between ourselves and a company called L Apps. It's called Owls and Vowels. So owls like the bird and vowels like the letter. Basically it's a combination between Boggle and a Match 3 game for iOS and Android, where you spell various words. And a lot of the game is about teaching new and unique words that are part of different topics. So during gameplay, you're trying to teach a dyslexic baby owl all of the words in the English language.
That's fucking cute.
the story is that there's this owl. His name's Albert Fleinstein. He's the...
Oh, that is the best.
He's the first ever dyslexic owl, and all the other owls don't really know how to teach him. So you, as the player, have to help him out and help him learn all of his words so that he can get his wings and leave the nest and graduate. Gameplay kind of takes you through 10 different worlds, teaching you about topics from space to winter sports and everything in between. And as you go, there are 6 different game modes, and most of them revolve around the different topic words that you're learning. You play the game and get high scores and compete with friends and the like.
That is fucking cool. Hey, I've just come up with the character for the sequel. It's a lizard, and his name is Liz Dexic. Dyslexic, get it?
Liz Dexic. I'm dyslexic myself, so I've always thought that dyslexic is a little bit of a cruel word. It's very hard to spell.
It's like lisp. Why'd you put an S in lisp, you cunts? Yeah. Why'd you do that?
Yes.
Why would you do that? And why is the word abbreviation so long? And why doesn't phonetic spell the way it sounds? English is stupid.
So
yeah, we've definitely found that out developing a word game. There's so many little rules to do with kind of adding extensions. So when you're trying to identify a topic word and you stick an ing on the end of it, how do you identify that still counts? And it's just a whole conundrum that we have kind of dived headfirst into.
Sounds like a Reef would be probably a little bit easier to dive into, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, they had their own nuances. The Reef game was kind of demanding from a technical art perspective, getting all the fish to school properly and interact with one another. That was.
Do you just code one of the fish to be a dick, just to bite other fish? You just have like a dick fish.
The everything avoids the shark, and the shark kind of heads towards everything else. So he's a bit of a dick.
Oh, he's the dick fish.
But no violence as of yet.
That's probably a good. We played around until they become self-aware.
We played around with the idea of having them eat one another. If you remember Viva Pinata, which was one of the big influences for it, your pinatas start eating each other. And it's always so depressing when you've got some cool pinata and then it's getting hunted and then it gets killed and you're just really upset about it. So
because they're so colourful, they look so friendly, they're just mung out on each other and you're like, oh, that's not right.
Just explode into confetti and have a great time.
That's so good. So Rainbow Reef is a store that's not quite released yet, but you're hoping on a release window soon. Owls and Vows, are we looking at a time frame to when this is coming out?
Yeah, we're doing a soft launch this week. So if anybody doesn't know what a soft launch is, it's where you launch in a limited region. So we'll be launching it in Australia to do some initial testing, get some feedback, basically make sure the game is as good as it can be. And then we'll be doing a global launch on the 19th of April. So the soft launch, which is coming out on this Thursday, which day is it? It'll be the 29th.
29th.
So, yeah, that'll be iOS only. So we can just focus on one platform and solve all those problems first. And then, yeah, there'll be the global launch with iOS and Android on the 19th of April.
I'm really keen because I've got an Android phone and it sounds like a game to be right up my alley. I've sort of found that... mobile games, I've delved more towards the word games and the puzzle games and stuff like that over time, I think.
They seem more relaxing than anything else, I find.
Yeah, and fitted to the mobile platform as well. I'm very, very keen to check it out.
The gameplay at the moment that GIF has got and the stuff, and I think my 7-year-old who's...
Hang on, do you say GIF?
Yeah.
Oh fuck!
Either one, I don't care. Whichever way I was going to say it, someone's going to be offended. So I don't
have
care.
You on record.
You can say it fucking properly. Say GIF.
That's not what old mate said it was. So
there you go.
But yeah, my 7-year-old, I think it's right up her alley. So
what is the? I mean, when you were designing it, what did you have a certain age group in mind? Obviously, like are you thinking primary schoolers, Nico, or? What were your thoughts there when you were designing it?
Whenever we design games, we usually try and focus on the psychographics rather than the demographics. We definitely realized that with Rainbow Reef, that was more targeted at 18 to 25-year-olds. But we found when we were down in Melbourne at PAX that we had lots of some really young kids that were really engaged with it. We're kind of steering away from specific age groups. I'd say probably above 12 would be recommended. Could be younger, but a firm grasp of the English language is obviously.
I don't even have that yet. So
yeah, so actually, a really good game for Wilco.
Exactly. Well,
no, I'm not quite there yet. I'll get there soon.
In terms of Chaos Theory games, like you guys work on your own projects and stuff like that. What, I mean, we've spoken on this podcast quite a bit about the indie scene in Australia. Where does the money come from? Because all this has to, I mean, this has got to cost money to develop games. You know, it's a lot of time and stuff. So is it just out of your own pocket? Like, do you get any assistance? Like, how do you put money in for all of this research and development and, you know, all the time that you put in? Where does this come from?
The eternal struggle. How do you get some funding? There are a few different models. The one that we follow is client services. So we do contract work for educational institutions or advertising agencies, building e-learning apps that teach dermatology to medical students, or arcade machines that are pretty much Pac-Man, but you're sponsoring a brand and educating about the product that you take to expos and the like. So that's the kind of range of projects that we get involved with. And we've found that a lot of people have approached us as technical experts in AR and VR. The skill set for developing games and developing VR and AR apps is pretty similar. So, and the skill set's kind of in high demand. So we find quite a bit of work.
Didn't you guys have a hand in a VR thing for eBay where you can make a shop or something like that?
The Maya eBay partnership, where they made a department store, is the first virtual reality department store. So basically, the idea is you're exploring the universe of products, and you're surrounded by all these floating items, and then as you look at them, they explode into related products. And then once you dig down far enough, you'll find an item that you like, and then it'll kind of go into a showroom, and you can look at it. We were involved with that project. We did some work with Red Cartel, which is another VR studio. They're working on a large scale VR kind of like zero latency in Melbourne, but they're doing it in Sydney. So that's a cool company.
That's pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
So in terms of you've sort of stated that. You take on contract work and stuff to fill the time between working on your own project or during the same time, and to fund those things as well. What happens when that when you finish a project? So let's say you finish Rainbow Reef and it's released, or you finish Owls and Vows and it's released. Do you start work straight away on something new, or have you already got something in the pipeline? Or in terms of a smaller indie developer, is there ever a time where you sort of sit back and go, okay, let's just get this out, see how it goes, and just chill for a bit? Or is it just all go, go, go?
We're usually working on the next thing pretty quick. The Owls and Vowels and the Rainbow Reef projects are both partnerships with other studios. So when we started doing client services, we decided not to exclusively work on our own projects. Everything that we do is either contract work or a partnership with somebody. So it depends on what opportunities we have available. We dabble in a bit of tool development and middleware development when we have some time that we're not working on contracts. We're always coming up with new game ideas and pitching them to around the studio and to other agencies and friends and partners. We always have something in the works, but we're never really sitting back and planning what's going to be our next adventure. It's more what opportunity is going to present themselves and who are we going to work with on the project.
Yeah, fair. Do you think the Australian government needs to get behind Aussie indie devs a bit more? Do you think that there used to be some sort of grants and stuff handed out? I
would love it if they did. I think that there's a good business case for it. I think that it would be wise for the Australian government to be investing in innovation, but I don't think that they need to. I think that game studios should be able to be self-sufficient. I think that running a business is a very important skill to have. And if you can run a business, if you can keep the doors open, if you can keep paying everybody, then you should keep on doing it, and you should crank it up to 11 and make as many games as you can. I don't think that it's required. It would just be a nice to have, nice addition.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty fresh take. I think all the people we've spoken to have sort of said, yeah, it needs to happen. Like, we need funding. The government needs to step in and do something. I've never actually heard it from a different perspective where it's, well, hang on, maybe these people are just not privy to how to run a business efficiently, potentially, which is a very, very valid point, because, while game developers and while developers in general, you're incredibly smart people. Developing a program or developing a game or writing a bunch of code is a shit sight different to running a business. And
we're very fortunate to have our managing director on board, James, who's kind of a whiz with the business and accounting and everything. So I think if we'd paired up with a different group, we might not have been quite so lucky. And doing contract work also teaches you to kind of work to deadlines and make compromises and focus on what the most essential parts are. When we first started making games together, we were making games when we were about 14 years old. Myself and the other two directors have been childhood friends since we were about 12, kind of designing games back then. So when we started making games, there were no restraints and limitations, and we just focused on how do we make the coolest game possible and what features do we want to add. And it was great, and we made amazing projects that we really loved, but nobody played them, or not a significant number of people played them, and they didn't make any money because we didn't understand the business side of things. We were focusing on making the coolest game ever. We weren't focusing on how we make money from this. I don't think that client services is the only way to make games or run a business. It's worked for us. And I think it's taught us a lot of really valuable skills along the way.
Yeah, definitely. That's
I'm glad we
cool,
went
man.
Into the how your company started, because I love that story. Me and Josh got firsthand on that. So like, just you guys,
it makes me feel so lazy. Yeah, no, we were making games at 14. I was like, I don't know, probably throwing rocks at someone at 14.
Man, between throwing rocks at people, I remember me and a few of my mates were also doing things. We were designing. I remember our crazy idea before GTA 3 came out to put, we thought it was Karma. We were going to call it Karmageddon Ultimate or something like that. And we were going to say, imagine if Karmageddon 1, you could get out of the car. And we were just like going through our mind, like, and then you could, and imagine if it was like a crime game, we could get out of the car and rob people and do all this stuff. And then about 3 years later, GTA 3 came out and we were blown the fuck away. Like, it's like someone had listened to us in one of our conversations. And I think I was probably about, I think I was in grade 8 or something, or grade 7 then. I guess the avenues back then in the early 2000s to make games were, I mean, I remember looking at game development when I was in high school, and it wasn't even a thing that was available in Australia at the time. I think you had to go and do a bunch of like scientific courses at university and do like Math C and stuff like that to get into it. It was a very different thing back then. But it's great that, you know, things have come a long way, and that young people who are interested in games have avenues now where they can explore that. I think that's very, very important. Bit of a quick question. Chaos Theory Games, you said that you contract out a lot of work. Do you still run under Chaos Theory Games when you're contracting out?
Depends on the project. Sometimes not. A lot of the advertising agencies we work with want to take the credit, and that's kind of what we have to deal with. But all of the educational work that we do, we get to put our own name on it, which is good. We enjoy that.
Yeah, that's pretty damn cool. And so Owls and Vows is out this week for iOS as a soft launch. And April, when was it? 19th.
Yeah.
So 19th, the global launch, yeah.
iOS only in Australia at the moment. And then, yeah, it'll be the global launch. But if anybody wanted to play it on Android, they can send me an email and I'll put them on the beta list. And then
I'll be doing that right now. Just let me. I will email you as we. I would love to be in that beta list. That'd be awesome.
Do you want me to say my email, or do you want to include a link to it? Or
we'll include a link to it. I don't potentially. Actually, what we might do is because I don't know who listens to this podcast. It could be anyone. We could get a creeper listen on the podcast. Stop listening, you creeper. No, please don't stop listening, creeper.
Listen,
we love you. If you want a copy of that email address, just hit us up anywhere on any of our email addresses. We'll do a plug later on, or hit any of us up and we'll get it to you one way or another.
It's a pretty generic one though, so up to you.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're comfortable with it being out there, I'm sure you can, you know, deal with the influx of new messages coming. Hey man, can I get a
from our
Android
one
beta?
Listener.
Or put the generic one, hello at chaostheorygames.com. It's pretty, pretty easy to remember, and we'll send you a beta, and then please let us know any feedback you have, any ideas you have for new features or levels that you like or didn't like, because that'll help us to make a better game in the end, and then we'll get to push some updates out to you before global launch.
It sounds great.
Do it.
That's a really good way. If you've always been in interested in video games, a way to actually getting in, you know, in with an indie sort of person and doing beta tests with them and helping them with decisions and saying what was good and what was bad is actually a really cool way to get into the scene as well. It's very, very cool, and I highly recommend it. It's quite rewarding when you find something and go, this isn't right. And they go, okay, cool. And then they push an update and it's fixed. It's really fucking cool to feel that.
It's funny. Make video games. One of the first games we released as Chaos Theory Games was Swap, which was a really cool, unique idea where it's a first-person shooter, but you can't kill anybody. When you shoot them, you exchange bodies with them. And then the game was basically like rugby, where you're fighting over a USB stick trying to get it to the enemy's base. So it's like reverse capture the flag where you're snatching people's bodies. We had a few kind of diehard fans that tested it and stayed in contact with them and become quite good friends with them and catch up with them at all the different conventions. And one of them got into QA, professional QA for video games, and wrote him a professional reference and everything. He hit me up and asked me for a reference, and I was more than happy to give him one. So it's always a good way to make some friends in the industry. And I think that at least in Australia, the video game development community is so small and tight-knit that friends go a long way, and they'll give good advice and be able to pass your details on to the right people.
Yeah, definitely. Great advice. Nico, stick around because we're going to do some news and stuff like that. And feel free to jump in anywhere you want. If you want to have a quip or make a joke or tell someone to stop being a dumb, then please do. So we're gonna do some news. It's time to do this.
This is the fucking news.
Oh, there's actually not too much news this week. I think everyone's been too busy playing all the video games that came
out.
Sea of Thieves, yeah. Or making video games in Nico's case. Which is probably better than playing video games, I guess, in some aspects. Apparently there's going to be a new Assassin's Creed. Fuck. Man, that can... Oh, can they not? Okay. Stop making these fucking games, man. They are, like, really... Ubi, like, I love you to death, but fuck. Fuck.
No, look,
you
I
need
mean,
to put it to bed.
Yeah, maybe
last
maybe.
One was good though. They just need to
Origins
have a...
Origins is better than the previous ones have been. I think is probably the only way I can really explain it now.
But
it's
I don't
better.
Think it's better than the previous ones have been. But I don't think it set the world on fire. And I don't like with the we've got open world fatigue now. You've got to be a Zelda or a Horizon Zero Dawn or. You know, something. You've got to be something pretty fucking special to stand out in the plethora of open world games that are coming out.
I'm just looking at the news. Apparently, it's 2019 anyway, so it's not even going to be this year because Red Dead Redemption 2 launches this year. So, yeah.
But they're doing Greece, and I just don't.
Apparently, that's the rumor anyway.
I just want them to do Australia eventually. That's all I'm waiting for. Yeah.
Croc Dundee is assassinating someone drinking a VB.
So look, where this whole rumor mill really starts is the series art director, probably pronounced his name wrong, Raphael Lacoste, who worked on Origins, posted a couple of snaps on his Twitter of various places in Greece and made some comments about, you know, doing some research and things like that.
Yeah.
There's also a bunch of talk happening around, you know, Greece for an Assassin's Creed setting, and I think back in 2015 there were a lot of rumors that Origins was actually going to be set in it.
Yeah, I remember that.
So, you know, with the photos and everything, everyone's like, okay, well, it might be the next one that's going to be set in Greece and follows on from Origins. I don't know.
What is even the storyline anymore? Because half my problem with the Assassin's Creed series is they had an interesting overarching plot that I'm pretty sure they just completely dropped it about number three.
Yeah, killed it.
And now I don't even know what the games are about anymore.
They're about Choco Camels and Final Fantasy.
Choco Camels. They're about cross-referencing other Square Enix titles for some weird reason.
Controversial to say that I'm a pro Templar, and I'd definitely be a Templar if I was in the game.
Yeah. Not an assassin, a Templar. Yeah. Yeah, King, and by the way, I know I've said it before, but do you know, like, can you be a good assassin? Can you actually, and I heard you can in this game, I heard you can finally actually fucking assassinate someone without the entire city knowing you've done it, which is the first time in any of these Assassin's Creed games. The other games are just murder. You're not even assassinating anyone. You're just fucking outright murdering people and then running away from 400 guards. Like, you're a pretty shitty assassin. But, you know.
Look, I think the game does put you in some situations sometimes where you just can't. And it is more about driving that story or trying to, you know, drive that particular part of it further. But there is a couple in Origins that I have actually assassinated and just walked out of the door and nothing's happened kind of thing, you know. So
Hitman was really good. You could kill people in lots of different ways in Hitman without ever getting seen. That was awesome.
So, yeah, look, anyways, that's where that whole rumour mill started from Mr. Raphael Lacoste. So if we're all wrong, then it's on his head.
The Assassin's Creed rumours are never wrong, to be honest. No. They're not rumours anymore. They're just early advertising before
advertising. Pretty much.
I'm really hoping that everyone's read into this the wrong way and they're doing like an Assassin's Creed Grease, like the movie, like Grease Lightning, and it's just a bunch of dudes like in 50s fucking get up and like lots of different cars and shit.
You know what?
And it's like Summer Lovin' Had Me a Blast and stuff.
Yeah, he'd play that already. Awesome.
He'd play
like
that.
Set in the 50s.
Yeah, there you go. They reboot the Assassin's Creed franchise and make it a musical.
Actually, jumping back, that I think is the biggest gripe I've got with the Assassin's Creed franchise is that through 1, 2 and 3, you're playing, you know, the ancient era, but you're also doing modern as well through Desmond. And that was really fun.
That's what kept me coming back.
Going. Yeah. And then they just killed Desmond off and that's it. Like there's no more. You know.
Did they actually kill him? I didn't know they killed him.
Yeah.
Oh, spoilers.
Come on, fans.
Poor
Dezo. How old is that game?
I was going to play Assassin's Creed 3 next week, Wilco. You jerk.
I know. I didn't do it.
Yeah, Wilco, you jerk. Damn you, Wilco.
It was Josh.
Damn you, Wilco, you jerk.
Speaking of jerks, how good is it Vivendi is now no longer chasing Ubisoft? Ubisoft has fought them off.
Vivendi needs to calm the fuck down.
The battle is over. Ubisoft is now buying back all their shares from Vivendi. They've reached an agreement, and of all people, Tencent is coming in to help them out.
Tencent are helping them buy everything back. Tencent are going to own them. Tencent are going to.
Tencent are getting in there. They're not helping out.
No. No, they're not.
That's going to be the next one.
That's where they're getting their capital from to help this out. But the bit I love the most is the fact that they came out and said, we've got a restraining order against Vivendi. They cannot purchase any shares in Ubisoft for the next 5 years. That's part of the
agreement. Can't move the headquarters within 200 metres of the Ubisoft headquarters.
No, you've got to move your headquarters. It's too close. Build a new building. That's so good. Pick the whole building up and fuck it off.
But this is actually pretty against the grain of where this whole story was going over the last 2 years. Like, it was pretty much given Vivendi the way they were buying shares and the way they were moving that they were just going to... It was all going to happen all this year or last year.
Well, I mean, Vivendi, if there is a company that's bigger than Vivendi, it's fucking Tencent. Tencent are massive. They're going to... They could piss and own Ubisoft. Yeah. Like, they are...
They own just about a share in just about everything these days as well. So
it's
a little bit scary. I assuming Vivendi will probably move on to EA next, the way things are going.
But just take a shot at EA next.
Oh, yeah.
They probably win that
too. Everyone will just
be much fucking worse than EA at the moment. Yeah, I don't know. It's not in the news here. We can talk about it here. EA... Oh, they came out in the week and said that they're doing there was some advertisements online for a new story-driven Star Wars game. An open-world Star Wars
open
game.
World
that's it. An open-world Star Wars game.
Didn't they cancel one of those not long ago?
They cancelled the story-driven one.
They cancelled the story-driven one that they took... What was the writer from? She was a really famous writer from something.
Uncharted.
The Uncharted writer, that's right. She was working with Naughty Dog. She came across... Yep. she came across to reboot the 1717. What is it? The weird one. It was meant to be a reboot of that thing, the Star
1776,
Wars. 1776 Star Wars game, and then it was going to be a story-driven like one, that. And then she was like really excited to work on it, and they fired her and said it had been scrapped.
And killed the studio.
Yeah, killed the studio. And now they're like, oh, we're making an open-world Star Wars game.
One of those companies is working on. It's pretty much the same assets, I believe. So yeah,
they probably just wanted to reuse all the assets that are already created.
Yeah,
well, that's the thing with EA that, with the fallout of the guys who made Project Cars. They were working with EA on Need for Speed back in the day. One of the Need for Speeds, and when they walked away, they set up everything. To be all their assets were under middleware. They actually created a middleware company, and that part of the agreement was that anything that they owned stayed with EA, and they had to use assets that EA could use in all their other games. But yeah, they put everything under middleware, and
it really when
they
left,
they
me.
Went, all our assets are ours because it's actually that company owns them, that middleware company.
It really, look, I'm hopeful because of how much of a Star Wars nerd I am, and the fact that
Don't
Disney
get hopeful.
Disney, well, no, because Disney retconned pretty much all of the cool stories of Star Wars. So now we have this incredibly amazing universe that can be rewritten any way that, you know, that people see fit.
Yeah,
and we could get some really fucking good stories.
It's not going to be rewritten the way you want.
No. Well, but we'll never read it the way that I want because I'm not writing it, and I never would because I would probably just write the old stories because they were fucking cool anyway. But we've got a lot of... There's a massive potential here to do some really cool things with the Star Wars universe. And I
if
really...
there was another publisher involved, yes, there would be great potential there.
I know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me once, shame on me sort of stuff. But fuck, man, I really hope... I really hope that a good Star Wars game comes out, because the last good one was KOTOR 2, wasn't it? I'm pretty sure that was the last good Star Wars game. A really good one.
I'd probably back that.
We'll put it this way, there's not many good movies in the Star Wars universe these days
Fuck yourself. Endlessly.
I watched Rogue One for the first time the other night. It was terrible. But anyway, we'll move on.
Oh, yeah. Well, that, I thought it was all right, but yeah.
There's no main
Star Wars. Fucking main canon
one, but
anyway.
Such awkward moments in there, and so unbelievable, stupid, over-the-top moments. Yeah,
man. Oh, so I was talking to a friend at work. I was talking to one of my colleagues at work, and he goes, oh, it's got a twist ending. You'll never guess what happens, because I hadn't seen it at this point. Yeah. And spoilers, but not really spoilers. I was like, they all die. He's like, well, how did you guess that? I'm like, because they're not in episode 4. It's a prequel, you fucking idiot. How are they going to explain that? They've got to fucking kill them off because they're not in the movie that was released 20 years ago. He's like, oh, yeah. Fuck you for using logic.
Fuck like, you well. For using logic.
I'm like, well, you know.
Name of the podcast, eh?
Fuck you for using logic,
Let's move on.
Onto some more uplifting news. CD Projekt Red, the developers of Cyberpunk 2077 and The Witcher and Gwent, apparently are opening a new division called Roclaw.
In whatever the name of that place
Roclaw.
Is.
Roclaw.
Roclaw? I guess, yeah. Roclaw?
Yeah, that one. Okay, cool.
It sounds like something my dog would say. Rock, rock.
I think they've got a little bit of spare cash to employ some new people. So
yeah, I wonder if they were expect because The Witcher 1 and 2
they
were
not expecting 3 to go off.
No,
because
The Witcher 1 and 2 were critically acclaimed but not critically successful.
No.
And coming off the back of Witcher 3, let's ask Nico. Nico, what would you do if you had created a game that did, let's say, you were like, okay, we're expecting it to make X amount of money, let's say $100,000. We're expecting $100,000 profit out the back of this game once we finish. What would you do if it then increased that by 100-fold? Would you be like, whoa, oh shit?
I would probably put half of that back into the core business, and then I'd invest the other half in a little innovation division, or like a little play school essentially, where we get to have fun. Just get to work on cool little projects, experiment with tech. Basically, that money isn't for commercial use, or you're not trying to make your money back. You're just trying to do some cool things that you're proud of and that you really believe in. And hopefully that will kind of filter back into the core business. And you can use that in your commercial projects to maybe create some features that people haven't seen before, or create a AAA title with some riskier content that's been proven. That's what I'd do.
Shit, that's a. I was just gonna say I'll get real drunk.
Proper drunk.
I don't know.
And that's why he's a successful game developer.
Yes, that's why I haven't started a business.
Sounds like that's what Steven's gonna run up to.
Do you think that's what they're like with Roclaw? Do you think that's sort of, well, we don't even know what it's going to be, really, do we?
Or no, we do. Sort of said, so look, Roclaw's in southwestern Poland. So that's why we can't pronounce
the name. And I think they're getting the name. It's close to all the other places.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, so it's really, got, so far as I'm aware, it's bolstering development of Cyberpunk.
Yeah, but they've also got tax incentives and stuff in that area. That's why they're opening it up. So cheap labour.
So they got lots of money, and we're like, we need to find a way to hide this money. let's open up over here with the tax laws are more lenient.
The other problem that CD Projekt has is, They've had Witcher 3. Yeah, we'll put it out to a small audience. People love it. We've got this small project, Cyberpunk 2077, that we're going to work on. All of a sudden, Witcher 3 has blown up. Now there is so much pressure on Cyberpunk 2077 that they need to actually go, well, we can't just make it any old game anymore. We've got to make this amazing. So it makes sense that they're expanding the studio to really work on this, because there's so much more pressure on them now. Like, they've got so many eyes on them. So,
Witcher 3 was very sick. That whole the Bloody Baron quest line and those three witches was probably one of the most memorable quest lines in any fantasy game I've played. It was fantastic. Did you play through Witcher 3, Nico?
Not the whole way. I probably played.
Did you get to Skellige and then stop?
I don't know. Maybe played like 5 to 10 hours of it. I remember. Yeah. Fighting a few griffins and gathering a few potions and things. Bloody Baron
wasn't your style. It wasn't your style of game, because you said before you're sort of more into the strategy sort of games, I guess.
I really like role playing games. I just find that they take a lot of time to get through them. Yeah. For some reason, I like to sort of. Bludge out and play simulation games instead. when I don't want to be doing anything. I find that RPG games are great, but they require a lot of investment. I played a lot of Skyrim. I played like 400 hours of Skyrim. So,
wow. That was on how many different versions of
the original on PC back in the day when it first came out. Yeah, that's it. I played it enough then. I don't need to play it again.
Yeah, it just keeps getting re-released. People keep buying it. I'm like, oh, okay, fair, whatever. Each their own and all that.
Playing it in the smart fridge.
Yeah, fucking hell.
Well, it's going to be the new DLC for Fallout 4. You're going to be able to play it on one of the TVs in one of the.
It won't surprise me.
Yeah, wouldn't actually.
Rare has responded to what we were talking about before, the concerns of a Sea of Thieves amount of content.
Mm-hmm. I do love this, because like often IGN, the great people that they are, they put out their thoughts and they say that no one responds to them, but Rare actually responded to them and basically said, you do realize this is an ongoing persistent world, the game that we will be bringing content to. I think the first actual major patch is only a couple months away. Mm.
It's producer Joe Neat.
has
come back to him and said, you know, like, Sea of Thieves for them has always been a game that was going to grow and evolve, and they're going to release new cosmetic options and new mechanics and ways to play as the game evolves and grows. So I guess it covers off on one of the big issues that or worries, I guess, that I still have for Sea of Thieves is that how long it's going to be a viable game for me anyways. You know, at what point does what is in the game now become, okay, I've done everything. You know, I've never really been I'm not a trophy hunter. I'm not 100%. I'm not a completionist in games. I play it because I enjoy it, and then when I stop enjoying it, I don't play it anymore. You know, at what point is this game, Sea of Thieves, going to get to that point for me? You know, and that worries me. You know, how long, what's its legs like? You know, what's its longevity?
Well, I guess it depends on what your. I guess that really depends on what your expectations were going into it. Like if you. This is expectation versus, you know, what you get out of reality out of it. So if for me personally, I would personally be disappointed in a game. If I went into a game saying, fuck, I'm going to play this for 200 hours and I'm going to love it. I went in there and I got 40 hours out of it. I'd be disappointed because I went in thinking I was going to get 200 and came out with 40. If I went in to a game, a single play, like for instance, Persona 5 is a great example. I went into that going, man, this is going to be, you know, it's a JRPG. I'm expecting a 40 hour game. And I got 120 hours out of a single fucking playthrough of that game. I was like, that is insane bang for your buck for a really good storyline. 120 hours in a fucking single playthrough. That's crazy good. That's so much. So if you went in expecting not much and got more, you'd probably feel a bit different. Yeah, I think people went in expecting a complete, and I don't know, and this is where I'm confused, because I didn't really keep up with what was happening before, not like No Man's Sky. When No Man's Sky came out, they promised this fantastical universe, and I believe one of the things was this is the last game you'll ever have to play, and there are, you know, 657 quintillion planets, and you could never possibly, and no, it'll take so long for people to get to the middle of the galaxy, and there's going to be other players playing, and then people jumped in, and what they were selling was very different from, or seemed to be very different from the experience that people got in the game. And whether or not that was from the hype surrounding the game, or whether or not that was from the developers, it doesn't matter. People came in expecting something and were given something different. I'm just trying to find out if that's happened somewhere along the lines of Sea of Thieves, or trying to see it for myself and say, okay, when did this? Because Wilco, you can't, like, I understand that when you say people get salty on the internet, but when there's as much outcry as there has been, something fell down somewhere. There was an expectation made by, whether it was wrongly or not, there was an expectation made somewhere, and people are now feeling like that hasn't been kept for some, that expectation was not met in some way or another. And I still can't work out where that was.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if that expectation came from the developers, to be honest
with
you.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it might have been a societal expectation from the hype train for the game, you know?
It being rare. And to be fair as well, Microsoft showcasing it pretty heavily because they really didn't have much else. Microsoft haven't had much else for a little while. They've been showing Crackdown 3 and Sea of Thieves for a while outside of the project, like outside of Gotham and stuff like that, like Project Gotham Racing and Forza, and not Project Gotham, Forza, that they show every year. So outside of the games you know are coming, like the Forza and whatever Halo thing they're releasing next year and whatever Gears of War thing that they're working on, Sea of Thieves and Crackdown 3 were the two big showcases that they kept showing. So potentially I think that maybe because they put it on this pedestal and said this is coming and this has been coming for so long, maybe its expectations got blown out of the water. Maybe? I don't know.
No, I just think people are jumping on a bandwagon of hate for this game, and a lot of people who are claiming that it's terrible and it's not meeting their expectations aren't playing it or weren't expecting to play it. I honestly think that the best thing for this game was to get it into as many hands as they can, and that was the Xbox Game Pass. That's perfect. That's the way to do it. But it also has the negative connotation of a lot of people who weren't going to play your game and it don't understand what the game was really about, it got their hands on it, and I don't know, it's cool to hate on it. Because that's honestly what YouTube and Twitter and all this other stuff's built on. If you're going to go out there and say that you love Sea of Thieves and it's the best thing ever and this is why you love it, you're not going to get views. But if you're going to go out there and say that, oh, there's not enough content, all that kind of stuff, that's what people are clicking on. And YouTubers who are still making money, that's what they want. They don't care what the content they're putting out is. They care about the dollar at the end of it.
But surely not every single YouTuber that is saying that is just in it for money. Surely there are people out there that are actually saying,
yeah, the ones that are enjoying the game are just enjoying the game.
Yeah. And I think maybe it comes back to, you know,
it has its issues. I 100% am with the fact that it has issues, but so does every sort of game when it comes out that is going on. But like, it's it's also it's a new type of game. Like it's not the same as anything else out there, and that's the other thing. Like people shouldn't know what to expect from it because it is such a unique title. Like it is just go out there. There's a map. Just go fucking have a look at shit. Like some of these islands are so detailed, and then you're not even seeing it because you're just jumping on the thing. You're getting the treasure. You're getting off before you get killed.
I would say it draws a lot of parallels to MMOs and Destiny and stuff in the sense that, I don't think it's an entirely new thing. I think that the setting being pirates in the ocean is quite new. I think that the gameplay loop is probably something quests and stuff has been done before.
Yeah, no, the simple fact that it's skill-based and that's it. There's no other progression. I think that's what's getting people the most upset is the progression for the reputation side of it is slow.
It's a grind. It's the same as an MMO in terms of when you had to do your rep quests. Like you had to go on, log in every fucking day and do your dailies to get your reputation for the day, so you can get the mount after 3 months of grinding.
But that doesn't actually improve your character. What improves your character is playing the game and getting more skillful at the game.
Yeah,
listening for those audio cues so you can hear people that are swimming up to your boat, and all this other stuff. Like it's all skill based, and there's no other progression to this game, which I love because I can play it for 1,000 hours, and then my friend who wants to just pick it up for the first time, he can join me. There's no barriers to entry. It's not like,
like level 40 and level 10. You've got to play for another 40 hours before you can join.
My skill and his skill, I can teach him my skill, and all of a sudden we're playing together. Even to the point where when I get to Legendary, I can share my Legendary quests with this person who's only just bought the game now, and there's just no barrier there. And the progression is slow because it doesn't really mean anything. Like it makes the quests a bit more deeper. It allows you, because there's no hand holding, it allows you to play the game, get better at it, and get better at it, and get better at it, because you do need more skill when you get the higher reputation quests. And it just allows you to naturally learn the game. There's no one forcing you to do this or telling you to do that or anything like that. And I think people, they want the hand-holding. They want to get to Legendary status ASAP. They expect, you've got that in the game, I expect to be able to get that in my short period of time playing the game. And
that was one of
the
problems with Destiny. That was one of
the
problems. Like labelling these things, like labelling Destiny as an MMO for consoles brings with it some connotations that have been MMO for a very long time, and that is that MMOs should be played over months.
Yeah.
And years sometimes, and to be able to, for you to be able to reach max level and max light in a week, that's not an MMO. That's
unless you've got super good end game, that's pointless. And it does feel that it's artificially inflated, like the prices of stuff for your ship are very high. But I understand why, because if you see a ship in the distance that's all of a sudden red and gold because they've paid the 70k gold to get that paint job for their ship, you know that person's a pretty serious pirate, and you should probably not go near that person. Like, it actually means something in game, these cosmetics, and that's the whole game's based around this cosmetics progression, and they've made it mean something rather than just here you have a ship color, you have a sail. Like, it's an Oprah Winfrey game, like all these other games do these days, or they make you pay for it with your money, and they haven't done that.
It'll be interesting to see what the game looks like in 24 months or even 12
months. That's exactly right. Like that's the only comparison I'll give with it with No Man's Sky, is the fact that I can't wait till, like I've said before in the podcast, I can't wait for the community to drop off, and it's only the keen players playing it and keen players talking about it, and the devs can get back to, instead of fixing server issues, they can work on more content for the game, and we get this thing evolve the way it naturally will, and I just can't wait.
Speaking of the devs working on more content for the game, The devs have also come back out.
That's right, we were talking about that fucking 25 minutes ago, weren't we?
We've got another news article.
Yeah, on some other planned content that was coming for the game. So when you die, you go to the ghost ship, and then you wait for the respawn, and that happens. Apparently, that they were planning on a cost to start coming in for that, so you lose some of your gold every time you die.
And it all depends on how you died, which I love. So if you did something stupid, you lost a lot of money. Like I the other day, it was one of the best stories I've ever had. These guys raided my ship because they were playing music together, and they were trying to get behind me to shoot me in the back and then go rob my ship, but I had nothing on my ship and I was about to log off. But I knew I had 3 barrels of gunpowder in the bottom of the ship. So I went back to the ship. They did a shortcut, got back there first, and I just walked past them with a big smile on my face, shot the gunpowder barrel, blew us all up, and sunk the ship in one go. And I got no penalty to that. So,
yeah. Are bananas expensive in that game or some shit?
No.
Okay, because I saw a post on... I saw a post on Reddit that was like, we had a group of people jumped off their 4-man boat, boarded our 2-man boat, and proceeded to, sink the ship. Little did they know that we snuck onto their boat at the same time and ate like 80 bananas in their hole. So they were like, haha, joke's on you.
Bananas are the way to increase, to get your health back. So
I think that might be a trade item too in a crate.
They are, but it's not that expensive. Yeah. And they are 80 bananas. That's a fair effort to come across, to be honest. It is. So, but it's just it's the stories like that that are coming out of this game that are just what's driving me along, what's making it so amazing. Like,
that's fair.
We've had some really good stories and just stuff that just organically happened as we're playing the game, and it's just stuff you couldn't plan for, and that's the way I love it. Like that skeleton fort we raided, we had these guys, we had a battle for 20 minutes with
so how long until they introduce a battle royale mode? Okay.
It's basically a battle royale mode at the moment. You drop into a map and but there's no last man standing, I guess, but it's you drop into a big map and there's 100 other players on the map and you just go around killing them if you want.
Yeah.
So, I would like it, but I don't think it'll happen.
Yeah. But yeah. So, anyway, so they were going to bring a cost for dying into the game, and just due to the amount of player feedback that was, I think, pretty much along the lines of "don't be fucking daft." They've pulled that. They've pulled that whole idea, so they won't be bringing that in. So again, I think it just shows that the developers are actually listening to what the community is saying.
It's very easy to listen to the internet when it screams at you because it's all you can hear for the next fucking 2 years of your life.
That's probably true too.
We'll move on from Sea of Thieves. We've discussed it a very large amount over the last 3 weeks. I'm glad you're having fun with it, Wilco. I'm kind of jealous I'm not playing it still. I'm still really keen on... It's more of an interest thing for me, understanding where this disconnect has come from expectation versus, what they got out of it more than anything. I don't really believe in any of the negativity surrounding it because I haven't played it myself or anything like that, but it's an interesting thing for me. But anyway, moving on. Level 5 CEO. So, level 5 are the guys behind Ni No Kuni 1 and 2, I believe, as well.
Yep.
The level 5 CEO has teased an MMO. An MMO scale 20th anniversary title, because they have been out for 20 years. Level 5, congratulations, happy birthday. You can nearly drink in America. Nearly.
You've been drinking for 2 years in Australia though, so
fucking 6 years in Australia. What are you talking about, mate? Legal age is 18, we're all smashed at 14. That's how we do it. That's
a good point.
No, some of us are making developing games, aren't
we? That's a good point. Sorry. No, Nico would have had a beersy. His first game was just titled VB, I think, potentially.
We have developed a drinking game, so we're...
Oh, there you go. At 12 years old, our first game was a drinking game. But to celebrate Level 5's 20th anniversary, the company's newest game is apparently going to be set in the modern day, with epic scale similar to that of an MMORPG.
That's quite a little
battle
detail.
Royale elements.
Worries me immediately because the last game that did that was The Division, and everyone knows how I feel about that.
One of the best games ever made, yep.
Fucking righto.
Kind of killed that conversation just there.
It is good. It is a good game. It's just a fundamentally flawed game in my eyes in terms of bullet sponginess and stuff. It's just things you can't come back from. Setting it in modern day without fantasy means it's very hard to
fantastical.
It could be modern day with aliens invading.
It could be modern day with monsters invading. And modern day doesn't mean that it's modern day, doesn't mean that there's not fantasy elements to it. It just means it's set in a modern day, so that's fair.
Yeah.
I'm keen on that one. Very keen. Level 5 do some good shit. But that's it for news, surprisingly. listener feedback.
Questions. How good's this?
We do have questions. If you would like to ask a question, there are a couple of ways you can do it. Email us, megacast@ultrasupermega.com.au. If you don't want to email us, because no one ever fucking does anyway, you can jump in the Discord and ask us a question in the podcasting channel. If you'd like a link to the Discord, you are more than welcome to come and join us. It is a growing and budding and beautiful community. You can find a link to it on our website, ultrasupermega.com.au. Into the listener feedback, Whippy Cunty Munty Monsty Hunty has asked. That's such a fuck name,
such a good name.
So Whipflash from the Discord has asked, Xbox Game Pass, worth it or not? I'll reserve my answer till the end.
The one thing that...
The 14-day free trial is definitely worth it. After that, no.
See, again, I'm sure we've discussed this before. The one thing that worries me is you don't actually own anything. You don't actually own any of the games.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one thing. At any point, they can go, okay, this isn't part of that service anymore. And you've got...
Technically
you
speaking, if you
on.
Read the Steam terms and services, you don't own any of the games on Steam either.
Yeah.
Not one of them. So,
the issue I have it is purely the point that, hey, I want to play that game right now. Hold on, I'll just download it for the next 14 hours. And by the time it downloads, I'm like, I'm good. Thanks. I'm not in that mood anymore. It's not like Netflix and all that kind of services where you can watch it when you have the urge to do it with Xbox Game Pass. You have to premeditate that you are in that urge to play that old game Well, look, the fact that they're putting new games in them does make it a little bit worth it, but the fact that Microsoft doesn't bring out that many games sort of doesn't make it worth it. So you're going to get State of Decay 2 and Sea of Thieves.
Yeah.
And maybe Halo 6 next year.
Yeah, like what else?
Probably a Forza game.
What else are you going to get this year that you can't get somewhere else?
You'll get Forza Horizon Tokyo Drift when it comes out. That's going to be sick. Other than that,
Forza
I can't
Horizon,
think of any
other. Tokyo Drift.
I think I've still...
It's going to be set in Japan. I'll tell you that right now. It's going to be sick. I can't wait.
I think I've still got about 50 or 60 games from Humble Bundle that I've never played. So
yeah,
I'm now quite hesitant to sign up for any service that gives me free games. I find I play games when I pay for them and I actually want to play them. But maybe that's just me.
Yeah,
nah,
agreed.
I'm the same.
I've got fucking 500 games in my Steam library. I've played probably fucking 50 of them.
That probably even goes... Even look at PlayStation Plus. Like, I add them to my library, but I don't play them.
PS Plus is different, but because you're paying... It's a bit of a different service. You're getting those games for free. I always add them to my library. Always, every single month.
Yeah,
but you're getting those games for
play them.
A few of them I do, depending on which ones. Grand Kingdom was in the... It was this month, I think. That's a fucking brilliant game that people should play. Maybe that was last month. There's been a few games that I've played, but yeah,
Mac
you're right.
Was in there.
The vast majority of them I haven't. Mac 2 was free too. That was, but yeah, so the vast majority I definitely don't play. For me, Xbox Game Pass, not worth it. I personally don't think so. And Wilk already touched on it. One of the reasons is because the Australian internet is a fucking joke. Downloading the games is a pain in the ass. A lot of people are still hit by data caps. Secondary, a lot of those are Xbox 360 games. And while nostalgia is really, really cool, when have you actually ever gone and picked up one of your old Xbox 360 games and gone, God, I wish I could play this over Far Cry 5?
That is the big thing.
Like, they're nostalgic for a reason. They're very fun. And having... Like, I've got 100 PlayStation 1 games sitting behind me on the shelf that I look at and go, fuck, man, I'd really like to play Final Fantasy 9 again, because I still think it's very underrated. Very underrated. On the shelf beside it, I've got PS4 games that I still haven't finished, and I've got new PS4 games sitting out in the lounge room. You're not going to go back and play them. You're not going to do it. And if you are going to do it, then you're probably not going to be playing the newer games that are coming out, and in which case, you might save some money there. But I honestly don't think... If you're an avid gamer... I don't think Game Pass is worth it for the older games, 100%. Maybe for the newer ones, but even then you've got to download them, and then in a year's time when you hit, when you hit some struggle street, because everyone does in financial things a little bit, and you can't afford Game Pass next month because a big electricity bill came and something else happened in your life, and you come home from work, you go, fuck, man, I really wish I could play this game, but my Game Pass expired, now I can't fucking play anything. Fuck that.
I'm assuming they'll just sort of merge Game Pass into their Gold service eventually.
Yeah, probably.
Like that's where it's going to be, like PlayStation Plus.
It would become worth it then, but not as an extra now.
No, that's it. We've got two questions from Whippy as well that will probably get right up Nico's alley at the moment. So, thoughts on the current state of VR?
I think that the technology is really promising, and I think that I'm not really sure that there's an experience that I've played that I've thought I have to play this in VR over any other platform or medium. I think it's really cool. Like, we buy a whole lot of VR equipment and play a whole lot of VR games at the office because we kind of have to be up to date with what's going on and the client service work that we do. We are kind of consulting on a lot of projects in that space. In terms of consumer experiences that you have to play in VR and you have to have a VR rig for to play at home, I still haven't found it yet. I really want to make a...
Superhot's pretty good.
I haven't played. I own it. It's part of my library. I just haven't gotten around to it.
Superhot's really good in VR, but that's... Yeah.
But a bunch of the others in the office have played that. And another favorite is Gorn, which is the like gladiator-style VR one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's apparently amazing. And
do you agree with the sentiment that... VR and AR are probably actually going to end up being bigger in the commercial and industrial sector for things like medical students and police officers and people in those niche things that can really, really benefit from augmented reality. Like when you're teaching med students about a skeleton and you can, you know, put the body parts and stuff over these skeleton models standing live in front of them, and VR simulations for things like training for police officers and PTSD treatments and stuff. Do you tend to agree that VR and AR might actually hit more of their stride in those sectors than gaming at the moment?
Definitely. I'd say at least for the next 5 years, I'm expecting there to be a lot more use cases and applications in industry rather than for entertainment. Yeah. As the cost comes down, we'll see more people using VR. And there is already sort of a budding entertainment industry there. It's just still quite expensive and inaccessible to most people.
It's also very isolating. Gaming is, I live by myself, but gaming is still it still can be a very social thing. So it's kind of off-putting a little bit, putting on a VR helmet and a headset and not be like, someone could walk into my house, you know what I mean? Like I could be playing Far Cry 5, go out there, play it on my TV, and I've got a controller in front of me, and yeah, I could have headphones on, but I still have senses that are able to sort of see what's going on around me. You know, if someone kicks the front door down, I'm going to notice at the corner of my eye, I'm going to be able to hear it. If I'm playing a VR game and my sight's gone and my hearing's, you get lost in those worlds. And I feel sometimes when I'm in VR, like I watch NBA highlights and stuff on my mixed reality headset. I've got a Lenovo mixed reality headset down here, and it's fantastic. And I really like watching the NBA highlights and stuff and some sporting stuff on that. It's awesome. And playing games like Superhot, I find myself flipping up the visor every now and then, just making sure there's no one in the room with me and going, no, I'm still good. Like, no one's fucking creeping on me and has snuck into this fucking house and is staring at me.
I just had this image of Perko sitting on a chair with nothing around, like the whole house has been torn down, and he's just sitting there playing, watching his highlights.
Yeah, so like I think that a VR is kind of off-putting in the sense that it is very isolating, very isolating. And for maybe someone with a family, like I'm, you know, in the unlucky separated and stuff like that, but there are plenty of families out there where being that isolated when you've got kids or when you've got living with housemates, I don't know if that's a doable thing. Do you think that is another barrier to entry at VR as well?
The amount of times that people have punched the walls or kicked the speakers or whatnot, I wouldn't want to have a small child in the room. That would be dangerous, to say the least. Definitely. One game that I really want to make, or maybe somebody's already made it, but a sniper game for VR, I think that would be really cool if you had like a proper gun prop that had recoil and everything.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because it's the perfect game when you're just sitting there and like, one location, kind of maybe you're in a bunker or like a little area under some trees.
That's true.
Pick people off. I think that'd be a really, really fun game.
actually, one of the I don't know why it hasn't been done yet as well, but people are saying that one of the big issues they face in VR is movement, and they don't know how to use a controller. It sort of breaks the VR experience. But mech suits, why hasn't anyone created a mech game with a mech controls on each hand, like joysticks on each hand, the big old joysticks for flight simulators you used to get? If you could sit down at a fucking table, put on a VR headset, and have two joysticks for controlling the mech, that'd be sick.
Yeah, just having
a VR. So fucking good.
Yeah, even Galleon bloody VR game or something like that.
That'd be almost like being piloting an actual EVA suit or a mech. That'd be awesome. You wouldn't have to worry about movement then, because you would be doing exactly what you're doing in a mech, sitting down piloting it with two fucking massive joysticks. Get on it.
Well,
get
I
on
think
it,
that's
VR guys.
Why Elite Dangerous and Star Citizen have gone pretty heavy into the VR, because you can get the proper joysticks for that, and you're sitting in a seat, and then that avoids everything. You can just basically
fly. I do have to say, Elite Dangerous is one game I wish I had more time for, and that I do wish I had a VR headset for, because
I wish a Gundam game would come out in VR. I would buy that in a fucking heartbeat. If I could fly through space and battle other Gundams in VR, oh man.
I'd assume new MechWarrior 5 that's coming out this year or next year should have VR support. So
you think
you're probably going to get your mech.
And maybe a new Armored Assault, because I think From Software sort of hinted at a new game potentially, and everyone was saying, oh, new Bloodborne or new Dark Souls, and I am really hoping it's going to be a new Armored Assault. That'd be fucking sick.
Actually, I think MechWarrior Online would have VR support as well, from what I understand as well. But anyway,
I've played the Elite Dangerous in VR. It was when we first got the headset, and I had never played Elite Dangerous before. And I borrowed my friend's flight stick and everything. It was amazing. But you can't read any of the text because the resolution isn't high enough. So I had no idea what I was doing. I was trying to do the tutorial in VR. It was pretty dense. And I was flicking all these switches, and you can't see your hands. So you're randomly flicking switches and everything. And then there's they're self-destruct switches and things on the so I flick it and it starts beeping and louder and louder and louder. And you're like, just turn that off.
So it was very much like the real experience of being put in a fucking star freighter or whatever it was and trying to fly.
What
the fuck do I do? Why is this beeping?
Loved to have been able to see the UI. So maybe I want to get the, at least want to test out the new Pimax 8K headsets. They look pretty next level. So might be able to read the text properly then.
Yeah, I think that's one of the problems with the Lenovo one, that I've got the mixed reality. It is a cheaper, it's not like a $800 one. It's sort of made for cheaper, and the resolution in it, while this is a great headset, it's not, the resolution is not brilliant, so reading text is quite difficult to do. But I can still watch fucking my man Russell Westbrook dunk right in front of me, so love my NBA highlights in that thing. Whippy's second question. Do you see the Aussie
question.
Oh yes, third one. Yeah, thanks Whip. Do you see the Aussie indie scene improving, or do you think we're going to lose more studios over the coming months and years?
I don't know. I don't think I have a good answer for that. At least all of the people I speak to, in more the hobbyist and the small indie scene, still very much enjoy Australia. I think that the community is very strong, and not many of the people I know have moved overseas. I think that the real risk is with the slightly larger studios closing down or moving overseas.
Well, I think maybe you might have hit it on the head a little bit earlier.
Half their staff, so that was a little bit disappointing, and a lot of them will probably move overseas or the more skilled ones. So, I think it'll stay pretty stable for a while until all of the smaller studios at the moment get a bit bigger and employ more people and start growing.
Of course we're going to lose more. It's just that's a product of doing business. Things are going to close down. But do you see it overall improving with time?
I think so. I'm hopeful. I'm an optimist at heart. So
yeah, good.
I think so. Yeah.
Almost think it has to be honest, with the quality that we're putting out. I think eventually someone's going to take notice, and these companies should grow over the next couple of years with the quality of these games.
I think maybe you might have hit it on the head a little bit earlier, Nico, when you said that learning to manage and run a business successfully is one of the big stepping stones for an indie. And you know,
it'd be interesting to see how many of those indie studios, Josh, are headed up by a business man, yeah. like a person who studied business at university instead of just, you know, hey, I'm a developer and I really want to start my indie studio. I'm going to go do this with almost no business management knowledge. I would be interested to see how many indie studios have access to like a business undergraduate or something, you know, yeah. like, yeah. It'd be interesting to see.
I think, you know, if it's a studio that started without it, then they're obviously going to learn along the way. You know, and they're going to take those learnings, whether or not the studio that they start is still there, but they're going to take those learnings and start something new, you know? So
I think, as Nico said before, I think it's a very tight-knit Australian indie scene, and I think that's probably one of the things they're learning off one another is hopefully this business side of it and how to improve it. And we are starting to see, like, Queensland Film is now giving out some grants in Queensland, and obviously we saw Victoria's doing it pretty heavily, and we know Giant Margarita Guy's got some stuff from Tasmania, and South Australia just announced some stuff as well, so it's slowly coming through the money to help these guys grow and expand. So
it's true. Alrighty, last question comes in from Das Choma. Thank you for the question, my friend. Should I make a male or female redneck for Far Cry 5? It depends, mate. That wholly depends on what you want to play as. I'm not touching this one with a 10-foot pole.
It's probably a smart idea.
You do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I think.
Why is it male or female, mate? Why are you assuming genders here? Hey,
because Ubisoft doesn't give you the option to be genderless.
Fuck! I'm surprised that did not kick up a stink, actually. But anyway.
Yep, it will be. Oh, although God. I'm really surprised that.
If we're going to be that politically correct, at no point do you actually choose male or female.
Male or female? That's true. You just choose the body type. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, so you can like, if we're going to be that politically correct, then you can put whatever label you want on that body type.
Yeah,
that's true.
I'm actually shocked that Far Cry 5 hasn't made a bigger splash with this whole violence in video games thing that America's raving on about at the moment.
Wait till next week.
Oh, it takes a while for the news to catch, I guess. Actually, going on what Trump, the video he put out, it'll actually be in 14 years' time that they'll be showing Far Cry 5.
I'm not fucking surprised.
One last thing, just talking about news and how long before the podcast started, I walked out in the lounge room and Emma's watching the current affair. She's gone, oh, look, A Current Affairs doing a story on Fortnite, and the thing was, Fortnite's free, but it's really violent. Should your child be playing it? I'm like, for fuck's sake. She's like, do you want to watch it? I'm like, no, it's just going to make me angry.
That's like Twitter at the moment for me. I look at Twitter and I get angry. The Australian, don't start me on the Australian journalism industry.
Anyways. All right, we've bitched enough. Ultra salty cast is coming to a close. What are we looking forward to? Let's do this part, Wilco. What are you looking forward to other than more Sea of Thieves? Because we know you're looking forward to it.
No, that's it. That's all I'm looking for. No, honestly, there's a little game coming out next month called God of War that I'm sort of starting to get G'd up for. There's a little game the month after called Detroit that I'm really starting to get excited for. Like, that is going to be a big one for me. And Jurassic Park Evolution, I'm starting to get a little bit keen for that too. And obviously Owls and Vows, big time.
Glad to hear it.
Josh, you, what are you looking forward to?
I actually think I'm probably going to pick up Owls and Vows on the work iPhone and give that a bit of a shot. Looking forward to playing some more Far Cry 5.
Hold on. Whoa. You and the English language aren't friends. Like, how are you going to go with this?
We'll go.
Yeah, I don't think you can make that call.
Well, I can. I know very much about not being friends with the English language. I can see it very easily because I know it personally. Yeah.
So looking forward to Far Cry 5. More of that.
Can you hurry up and finish that game already? Yeah. Come on.
God of War. Next month's another massive month. We've got God of War. There's a little game coming out called Extinction that I'm pretty keen to have a bit of a look at and see what that's
Nintendo
all about.
Nintendo Labo.
That's not a game. That's a marketing stunt.
Let's not open that can of worms.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that probably covers me out at the moment. Cool. Oh, and Avengers, the new Avengers movie. So.
Oh, yeah. Shit, eh? Nico, what are you looking forward to over the coming weeks and months, man? What is tickling your fancy the most?
definitely going to play some Sea of Thieves over the weekend. you've piqued converted. My interest.
Converted.
Hit me up if you need someone to teach you how to go.
Is everybody doing like a crew, or what do you call them, this weekend?
Well, yeah, we've got a crew going Thursday night, but I'm sure over at some stage over the very, very long weekend, we'll have a couple crews going. You're in our Discord now. Yeah. We've got Sailor Dory channel up above in the text channel.
Oh, it's fucking still called Sailor Dory.
It is. If you just hit up in there, Nico, if you do need us, one of us will be on.
Yeah.
We've got a fairly people on it.
Apart from that, Avengers, obviously, and then Deadpool coming out soon after.
Oh, yeah.
Ready Player One is coming out next week, which I'm really excited for.
Oh, I got to read that book.
I'm ready for the internet to be salty about it. It's gonna be so good.
I'm a bit of a sci-fi nerd, so hopefully, cool. I don't know. The trailer looks good, so
yeah, it does.
You never know. Might turn out all right.
I think everyone's gonna be real sick of pop culture. I think Zing's just gonna close after that movie comes out, because everyone's just gonna be pop cultured out from one single movie.
I just love the fact that we're starting this whole conversation of, you know, it might surprise us and not be shit. Like it's not the other way. It's like, oh yeah, it's gonna be good. It might surprise us and not be shit.
Oh, that's because Hollywood hasn't really earned the "it's gonna be good" moniker lately. I don't think, especially with their, you know, books to movies and all sorts of stuff. But
I just really hope that they haven't put too much modern pop culture in it, because one of the best parts about it was all 80s pop culture.
80s, yeah.
I think that would make it almost timeless, because if they have a lot of stuff in it from today, like I saw Overwatch characters in there and stuff, it's going to make it kind of dated in two different camps. It's going to be kind of 80s, but then kind of 2018 or 17 or whatever.
I was hoping that they're going to have 80s stuff in it too, but I think that a lot of that's going to be lost. I think a lot of it's going to be lost. I think it'll mostly be probably late 2000s to the early teens, sort of, I think.
Fingers crossed.
We'll see. Definitely.
Good luck.
I'm looking forward to a ton of stuff. I'm looking forward to playing through Far Cry 5. This story's already got me intrigued. Ni No Kuni 2, I'm looking forward to. God of War coming out next month, I'm looking forward to that as well. God damn, there's a few games coming out this year that I really want to play. I'm also really looking forward to playing more fighting games. I've been playing a lot on stream lately, and I'm fucking excited to play more of them. I ranked up in Street Fighter, having a blast, maining Kami. I'm drawing a lot as well, so I'm looking forward to drawing and practicing drawing more. Just having a blast at the moment, having a lot of fun.
You left one thing out.
What?
Twitch Brisbane.
Oh yeah, man! I'm gonna be in Brisbane. I'm so fucking excited for this
14th.
Too. April 14th. If you're in Brisbane and you stream on Twitch, or even if you don't, come and see us at Netherworld on April 14th. There is a Twitch Brisbane meetup. So all the streamers from around Brisbane and Queensland and stuff are traveling to Brisbane to go to this event. It's going to be lots and lots and lots of fun. If you need more details,
remember,
on it,
it's at the kid friendly time, 12 p.m. to 5 p.m.
Yes. Yes, but we'll be drunk regardless. So come to Netherworld. It's going to be rad. If you need more details on that, then you can follow Twitch Brisbane on Twitter, or come and join our Discord. We will give you all the deets on what is going on as well, because there'll be a few of us there. But let's close it out. Wilco, where can we catch you?
Before we do that, can I just quickly do a shout out to mate Danny Natoli, who has just picked up a new job with ReadPop, which is...
Hey, yeah, congrats, Dan.
Yeah, marketing of Oz Comic Con and PAX Australia. So big, big...
Congrats. You deserve it, man. You did fucking really, really good work at BenQ, and you deserve it very much. Well done.
Ben Quay,
that's right. Ben Quay. That's the fancier version of BenQ.
Ben Quay. So yeah, no, very, very much looking forward to what he brings to that, to ReadPop, so that'd be cool. But yeah, you can find me at Wilco's Jewel Zone on Twitter and Twitch, maybe YouTube, we'll see what happens, and big stream Thursday night of Sea of Thieves, so join us for that.
Beautiful. Josh, where can we catch you?
Super Mega Josh on Twitter and the Discord. Give me a shout out. If you've got Far Cry 5, I've unlocked the multiplayer. Let's see what it's like.
Sounds good. Nico, where can we catch you if we need to?
At Captain Polymer on Twitter. Polymer like the plastic. You can follow us on Facebook if you like, Chaos Theory Games. Or if you're interested in Owls and Vowels, just search that and it should come up.
Sweet. And me, you can catch me at Matt Jerkins on Twitch and Twitter at Matty Jerkins and pretty much Matty Jerkins everywhere else on the Nintendo Net. And you can catch us in our Discord if you want the link to that, like I said before, ultrasupermega.com.au and ultrasupermega.com.au for all of our content, because that's where we mostly hang out. And we'll see you guys next week.
See you guys.
Bye. See ya. See ya.